You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Thursday to you. We appreciate you being with us. Got a lot to get to today. A couple of new Razorback football commitments. We'll talk about those a little bit later in the show. The transfer portal, it just keeps on turning. We're going to start the show today, though, with Matt Zimmerman, the former Razorback basketball assistant coach, now the color analyst on the Razorback Sports Network, also works at the Razorback Foundation, all festive and dressed up this morning. Matt, how you doing?
Foundation Christmas party. We're trying to raise some money. How about that?
It never ends, right?
Never ends.
No. Hey, I want to talk to you about Razorback basketball. Just a four-game winning streak. This team looks like it's getting better. What have you seen over the last couple of weeks?
Well, they're probably the same as you, just a team that seems like they're playing harder, seems like they've got more of a purpose in what they're doing offensively, they're much more aggressive offensively than they were early on. And there was games this season that we were struggling to score a little bit. The defense has been good. Mm-hmm. But there was times where the offense kind of was bogged down, especially in the losses to Baylor. And really, we ended up scoring 77 against Illinois, but it took us a long time to get going. Mm-hmm. Although we didn't play great defense against Illinois, I think that was more of a case of Illinois just shooting the ball so well, and we didn't have good offense. And so, to me, the two losses both came down to offense. And now the offense is really clicking, and we're scoring a lot more. You're talking about in this win streak, 76, 75, 89, and 82. That's pretty good, and that's against some good competition. Now UCA and UTSA are what they are. But you still have to score points. And then at North Carolina A&T, looking at them on Saturday, I think the Razorbacks have a great chance to score 100 to, you know, maybe 106, 108 points. They may call the dogs off. He's not big on, like, the 10th through 15th guys. If you're up 30 with 10 minutes left, they're not going to start playing. You know, they're going to get in very late, kind of like Coach Musselman did it. And now the way the metrics are and the analytics – kind of benefits you to pound people pretty good. And so I think that he'll try to put a big number up against A&T Saturday. But I think the offense has gotten better, and that's why this team's better. I don't think the offense was very good early on. I think it was okay. You know, I mean, I remember struggling to score against Troy and struggling at times to score against Little Rock. But now that offense is rolling, and these guys are shooting it better, and it all starts with guys driving to the basket. Boogie, Adu, DJ, they're just attacking the basket deeper than they were. Adu's been doing it all season, but those other two have been doing it a lot more frequently now, getting to the basket. And another thing, Matt, is that we're scoring in transition now. Early on, everything was like slow down and try to run a play against Baylor. Slow it down and try to run a set against Illinois. Slow it down. And we were doing that against Miami. And then all of a sudden, he just kind of started letting it play. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a called play every time. There were still sets. The sets really worked good late in Miami, but there was flow and there was transition baskets and there was fast breaks. And there was 3-on-2s and 4-on-1s and 4-on-2s and 5-on-3s and numbers that you really want to get in an offense, and have been getting those a lot more often. It really starts with Boogie, DJ, and Adu Thiro, and those guys have been playing so well.
You know, we're in a point where – it's a week between the UCA game and the North Carolina A&T game, and then it's 9 days till they play Oakland, and I think it's like another 5 or 6 days before they start the SEC play against Tennessee. Point I'm making here is that there's a lot of practice time. And I've always suspected that this is the time of year where a team can really grow because of all the practice time that you get. You've been in multiple D1 programs. Just from your standpoint, how much growth do you think you see from a team during this time of the year?
A whole lot. So much on the floor time is big, and no stress of the really of games right now. These guys aren't stressed this week about North Carolina A&T. They're going to respect them and they're going to play them. But I think that they're already looking ahead to the conference and knowing how good we're going to have to be in a conference that's got like 140 wins and 20 losses. And so I think that they're having really good practices right now. He's calling them 2-a-day. Really, in the morning, they just come in and walk, do stuff, do some good skeleton stuff, do some a lot of teaching and talking in the mornings. And then the afternoon, they've been getting after it. And you need to scrimmage. And we've not seen scrimmage in here for several years. And he's getting to where he can scrimmage. He was scrimmaging in the summer some, and then at the times in the fall, it was really very limited scrimmaging because he had enough bodies. He had 15 guys, but there was always three or four of those top nine out, and I don't think he felt comfortable scrimmaging with, like, six of his top nine and then the bottom guys. And he would know exactly the reasons that. So he used GAs in practice, and there was not a lot of scrimmage time. And that's not a secret. He has said that in the media 30 times. And that not scrimmaging hurt. Mm-hmm. It's like not ever tackling in football before your first game. You have to tackle, and you have to get used to what's going to happen when you're out there playing. And I think now we're getting into more and more games. They've caught up, and now in practice they're able to do more stuff, more competitive. And this time of year you can do it because you have more time. And they're all healthy. You got your top nine guys. They're all healthy as of today. Knock on wood. They're all good. And even the 10 through 15 guys are all healthy except for a couple of them were hurt. You know, they had an elbow and they had a wrist. They had a hand. And they had all those injuries have healed. He had a concussion. All those things have healed up for the 10th through 12th guys, which help practice, except for Lawson Blake. He's the only one that's not out there. Mm-hmm. So you have access to 14 of your 15 guys. But, you know, there's so many positives with this team because you got a lot of talent. And you got a lot of NBA players on this team. And when you have this much talent, you have a chance. When I was looking through all the teams in college basketball, Matt, this was, I think, on Tuesday. And really, it looks like there's about 27, 28 teams that at times have all looked really good, and at times have had losses like we had against Baylor and Illinois. And there's probably close to 30 teams that legitimately could win the national championship. It's in the year where you go, okay, Gonzaga and Baylor, those two are better than everyone else. You don't want to play Gonzaga and Baylor. That was the year that we ended up running into Baylor in the Final Eight and losing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like that. There's no great North Carolina team that's wearing everybody out. There's no great Duke team. There's no great Kansas team that's beating everybody by 20. There's no great Kentucky team. I mean, those are all good teams. And one of those teams might win the national championship. But they're in a family of about 27, 28 people to me that can win the national championship, and Arkansas is one of those teams.
There's a lot of positive developments, I think, that are going on with like Boogie Flan. I mean, he's distributing the ball as well as we've seen. DJ Wagner's shots coming along. I don't know how many people, because he's not got a real high volume of three-pointers, but Nelly Davis's three-point percentage over the last five games is over 50%. It's really high.
He's shooting almost 40% now from the three, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that's with this really bad start of shooting the three. So, you talk about those last few games, over 50%, right?
Yeah. But the one that really jumps out to me, Matt, though, is Jonas Adu and what he's done the last two games. It's like you're starting to really see the potential there with him once this foot gets healed up.
Yeah, I agree with you, Matt. And, you know, when you look at our stuff, out of all of our guys that play, he's number nine in scoring average. So that's me and you mark this day, 12, 19, 24, and he's the ninth leading scorer. And by the time we get to about beginning of February, he's going to be the third or fourth leading scorer. Mm. And he's right now, he hadn't played that very many games. He's played eight, but the first three, he was really limited. Mm-hmm. You know, played 20 minutes in three games. So he's not been able to put up any numbers. Another number to watch is that 3.4 rebounds. And you get into February, he's a guy that can get double-doubles on a consistent basis. That rebounding number is going to shoot through the roof. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the one that's going to go up the highest is the effort and the influence he has on Razorback defense. He blocked 66 last year. And I've heard Rick Barnes say that he changed over 200 shots during the season for them. That's impacting a lot of shots. And he's blocked six shots for the Razorbacks, and he's probably changed another six. So he's at 12. That's not 200. He's got to catch up, and he's going to do that because he is such a good defensive player. That was one of the best things he did playing for the Volunteers, and he's going to help this team so much. But you are right on it. Just him coming back, getting healthy, being healthy, being able to play all these minutes, it's elevated his game. And that has so much helped this basketball team.
You know, another thing that I noticed, Matt, is Trevin Brazil, you know, the numbers are what they are. But one thing you can't put in the stat sheet is the effort plays, the hustle plays, right? And we're seeing four, five, six of those. I mean, even the, you know, the recovery to block the shot at the end of the game against Michigan, that's just a total effort play. And there's just something that looks different about him this year. Do you think it's is it a new coaching staff? Do you think it's the fact that he's more of a role player than being the guy? What do you think's different with him?
And that's a good question. And asking him that when I've talked to him some, he's pointed a lot to his own self, maybe growing up a little bit, maturing, going through the injury of two seasons ago. It's been 2 years ago since he blew his ACL. And it's kind of been his maturity and his growing. And I do think that coincides with a new staff. It's given him a new lease. It's given him new opportunities. It wasn't anything against the old staff by any means. The old staff's recruited him here. The old staff brought him here. They gave him a chance. They wanted him to do well. But he seems energized to me, and probably to you too. His effort seems greater. He's, at times last year, he was not as hard, not as tough as he had to be in the league. And he was pretty good at times in the league, but we struggled. We had a losing season. There's only a handful of those in Razorback basketball history, and he was a part of that. And I think this year he's determined to be a part of major success, major winning. And I think he knows that the work, the effort, the team cohesion, all that thing was not – there enough last year to win. And it wasn't because the coaches weren't pushing them. They wanted to win too. But it just wasn't there. There was no continuity. It was not a good team. We kept hoping that it would flip, and it never did. And I think he's determined, I don't want to go through that again. And I got a new staff. I got a new coach that is fired up about me. And he does teach and coach different than Musk. They both have their positives. But he doesn't, you know, I think he's in a really good place right now, and I think he feels real good. You know, and he's missed two games as well. So we got to make sure he stays healthy. He stays out there for these last 20 regular season games.
Matt, last one. We talked about the SEC yesterday and just how freaking good it is in basketball right now. I mean, just look at the last two nights. You've had Florida beat UNC on a neutral floor. You had South Carolina beat Clemson. Last night, Oklahoma had an incredible late game situation where they beat Michigan, and you know
and Vandy beat Citadel by about 60.
Well, you got that too. But I almost feel like we've gotten to a point with SEC basketball, which is crazy to say, that it may be deeper than SEC football. I mean, like from top to bottom,
SEC football right now.
The number of quality teams is amazing. What has changed? Because when you came in here with Mike and your staff came in here in 2011. It didn't look like this. It didn't look anything close to it.
No, it was a top-heavy league then. Our league was really good then. It was underrated, but it would not do as well in the non-conference. You'd always have someone like South Carolina or Mississippi State or Georgia. I remember one year with Georgia and fine coach Mark Fox. They went like 7-6 in the non-conference. And they lost to Gardner Webb. They had all kinds of bad losses. Well, then they ended up being a 500 team in our league. It killed the league. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be bad in the non-conference, you need to be bad in the league, right? Because it hurts your, back then, RPI, which was a little bit of a tough deal. But one thing about that, those days I always stick up for, back in those days, there was going to be two of them in the final. Kentucky, Florida, be in the final four. One year we had a three-bid league, and two of them went to the final four, those two. And Tennessee was the other team. We were a bubble team, didn't get in. Tennessee went to the Sweet 16. And we'd beaten Kentucky twice. Kentucky played for the national championship. We should have been in the NCAA tournament. Our league was beat up. Back then, it was easy to beat up on the league because we had Georgia and South Carolina and Mississippi State losing to SWAC schools and other schools. And it hurt our league, and it hurt our numbers. And now you don't have to worry about any of that. Everyone talks about the stress of this league. I think this will be the less stressful it's ever been for a lot of coaches. Because all you're playing is quad one wins. There's 18 of them. Your net's going to go up. Your net's going to go up from where you're at right now to the end. Now, if you go 2-16, obviously your net's not going to go up. If you go 6-12, your net's maybe not going to go up. If you go anything above about 7 wins from where you're sitting right now, your net's going to go up because that means you've beaten top teams. the way this net deal is, Matt, the way they run it, by the end of the regular season, the SEC could have like 13, 14 of the top 30, top 35 in the net. Because we're all playing each other. And that's they're going to change that net up after this. Because there's too many people that don't love the SEC like we love it. They're going to try to change this up. But incredible non-conference. But you're right. Top to bottom. Sitting here in December, this is the strongest our league's ever been. Let's see where it is April the 7th, which is the national championship game. Do we have three teams in the Final Four, which we've never had? We've had two several times. Well, we have. I remember 94, Arkansas and Florida. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of times there's been two. There's been times in other leagues, the Big East has had three. I think the ACC might have had three once. This league might do that. Might do that. And got a great chance to have the national champion.
It's fun. It's fun to watch right now. I haven't had this much fun watching non-conference basketball in a long time. The quality of the competition is really good. And then obviously – you know, the teams are performing well. Matt, I'm sure I'll see you Saturday, but if I don't, Merry Christmas.
All right, Matt, Merry Christmas to you guys. We miss Bob a lot. Think about him every day. And I listened to the YouTube of the service that you sent me. It was beautiful. Enjoyed listening to you talk. Coach Richardson, David Basil, Kevin Trainer, everybody. And rest in peace, Bob.
Well, Matt, we appreciate your time. Thank you. All right, Matt Zimmerman of the Razorback Sports Network. I want to tell you, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most trusted in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. I want to tell you, too, you can find our podcast, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. We put it on all of our pages. Just search Whole Hog Sports on any of those platforms. When we come back, Christina Long will be with me. We'll talk about Razorback football, the new commitments today. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They're your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Christina Long here with me now. The news of the day for Razorback football is that there's two new commitments this morning. A couple of offensive linemen. You've got Corey Robinson, a big tackle from Georgia Tech. You've got Caden Kittler, a lineman from Central Florida. So obviously offensive line play is an area that Arkansas really needs to address this offseason with the loss of three starters. It's hard for me to tell just how good players are. I'll tell you, Robinson looks like a really good prospect. And you know, I mean, Kittler comes out of a program where, you know, Malzahn's, and I know Malzahn's gone now, but, you know, he's typically run a program that's had pretty good offensive line play. I know you've been over here reading about him. What have you found out?
Yeah, I mean, I think Robinson, you're right. He's a really big prospect for them. I think, you know, especially at tackle, that's something that they have a big need at. You know, Carmona on that other side is going to be big having him. But, you know, they need somebody there. They need somebody to compete on the other side. So, I mean, yeah, I think he's a big get for them. You know, I look with offensive line, you know, Pro Football Focus grades are not, you know, the end-all, be-all of evaluation. But with offensive line especially, I kind of go there to look at – because, you know, there's no stats you could look at really with offensive line. There's not a lot of concrete ones. But he graded out really well, especially in pass blocking, which is something that they need desperately, Arkansas does. So he graded out better than, you know, looking at – all of Georgia Tech's offensive linemen and all of Arkansas's kind of stacked up next to each other, he graded out better than everybody in pass blocking, which is really impressive. You know, he played a lot of ball there. And so, yeah, I mean, I think this is a hole they needed to fill, and I think this is a big deal for them to have gotten him.
I'm looking here, as you were talking, at Richard's story on Robinson. Robinson, 6'5", 305 pounds, began his career at Kansas, transferred to Georgia Tech. Started all 12 games in 22, 12 of 13 last year, started every game this year, the last seven games this year. But here's what jumps out at me. Number two offensive tackle by on three in this year's portal rankings.
Yeah, that's huge for them. I mean, they needed a win at offensive line so much, and it's, this really seems like it's going to be one. And, you know, they'll need to sort of put it all together. You know, we talked the other day about how it is hard to build a line out of the portal, but we talked about how they've got having pieces back. You know, last year everybody was new. Next year they'll have kind of a mix of guys that have done this before with Arkansas and some new guys. And this is certainly a very experienced veteran offensive lineman, which is something that you would hope would benefit them too. Because I feel like a lot of the guys they got this past season, you know, weren't necessarily that way. You know, they were guys that had played here and there at other schools, but didn't have as much experience as it seems like Robinson has.
Kittler, 6'3", 295 pounds. He's an interior lineman, maybe a guard that they're going to look at him. Rated the number 17 interior offensive lineman by on3.com. Says here that he visited SMU, Mississippi State, and Florida State in addition to Arkansas. So a couple of new linemen for the Razorbacks. That gives them how many? Division One? Are we up to seven now?
Yeah, something like that.
I think it's seven.
It's quite a few.
Seven Division One. There's also a couple of junior college players in there too.
Yeah, so they're putting a pretty good group together. You know, it's interesting. I've been doing these commitment analyses that we post on wholehogsports.com, and I talked about a couple guys yesterday with some writers, and it's been an interesting mix of guys who, you know, Ken, like, for example, Ken Talley at Michigan State. I'm working on writing one up about him after I talked to a writer about him yesterday. And he was a guy that he was like, yeah, he was here for a couple years and we never talked to him, like, media-wise. Like, he was never brought out for media. You know, he played, you know, he was a rotational guy. He played in 10 games this season, but we just, you know, he basically was like, he just didn't make a huge impact here, but, you know, had talent that they just never really got to. And I talked about Jaden Platt, the tight end. That story's online now. And that was the same kind of thing where I talked to a Texas A&M writer who basically said he was a super highly touted tight end, came in, you know, was the fourth highest rated recruit in their 2023 class. But he came into a really deep tight end room in a way, and they were surprised. You know, he was talked about how it was kind of a surprise among Texas A&M people that he committed there because of how deep the tight end room already was. And then he just got buried on the depth chart. So that's another kind of they have a mix of guys who seem to have kind of some untapped potential that Arkansas is going to hope to kind of bring out of them. And then they're also getting some guys that are a little bit more proven, which is a good sign too.
Drew Sanders had untapped potential. Yeah. I think that's kind of that's kind of the hope with some of these players is that you can bring them in and have that type of performance from him because he was phenomenal.
Yeah, he was great. I forgot about him, actually, but he was outstanding.
Well, he was about 400 players ago because he played
exactly.
In 2022.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's
they've had a lot of linebackers come and go since
then. It's crazy trying to keep up with all this. I wanted to ask you a bit more about Jaden Platt and what you wrote about him. If you haven't read Christina's commitment analysis, you can read it on our site right now at wholehogsports.com, and she's done a handful of these now. Talking to people from the program where they left, the numbers don't like because so we were talking yesterday. The numbers don't suggest that he's the receiving type that left here was. You know, I mentioned that I thought maybe he's more of a brought in for blocking purposes. Mm-hmm. Did you get any insight on that?
Yeah, that's kind of what it seems like. You know, when I was speaking with a Texas A&M reporter, he was like, yeah, I mean, he didn't play that much, so it's hard to be able to tell you that much about his game. But, you know, I think that's kind of what was the intent with A&M when they brought him in. He's almost the same size as Andreas Poska, the Eastern Michigan transfer Arkansas brought in last year, more of a blocking guy. He'll still be here. You know, I think he's announced he's coming back next year. Yeah. So, you know, they're very similar in size. Now, just because Platt, you know, looks prototypically like a blocker. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have or couldn't develop more of a pass catching threat, but it seems like, you know, they're definitely in the market for more tight ends. This is not going to be the only tight end that they add. But I think we talked about this on the show the other day. I don't think this is like the guy they're trying to bring in to replace Luke Haas in the aggregate. I don't think this is him. But they still need, you know, they need improved blocking at tight end, even if they got some of these guys back anyway. So I think, you know, if they can make him, you know, a solid blocking option, then yeah, I think that's a win for them.
In the aggregate. I like how you just kind of
I gotta drop the money ball line.
Just drop it in there. Yeah. I would never think to I don't think I'd ever think to write that. I certainly would never think to speak that. That's what's fun about having you here.
Are like, you saying I'm smart? Wow.
I'm just saying we're different. We're just totally different in a lot of ways. So the portal gives, the portal takes away.
Yeah.
Arkansas loses a couple of more last night. Not that they were new additions to the portal, but Addison Nichols has announced he's going to SMU. I think he's the second player who's announced he's going to a playoff team because Brad Spence is going to Texas.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
And then you've got Nico Davale, who committed to UCLA.
Yeah,
overnight.
Not the first UCLA commit because people forget Jaden Wilson left the team after the first week. He's going to UCLA too, so a couple Razorbacks going over there.
Boy, it's hard to keep up.
Yeah, it's trade after Arkansas got two of their top commits in their recruiting class, their high school recruiting class.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, and then like UAB, Arkansas gets Cam Shanks from UAB, mm-hmm. and then somebody ended up there. Was it Gums?
Gums.
At mm-hmm. UAB?
And I think Arkansas's got a couple of guys that have visited from UAB that they're still kind of in the mix with too, trying to talk to them. I can't remember which positions.
But they're not technically trades yet, but that's coming.
Yeah.
That's coming.
Yeah, it's true.
I think that's coming.
It's true.
Speaking of Shanks, Richard wrote this last night. He was named an All-American, first-team All-American by the Sporting News, which is one of the five major All-America teams. If you get all five, if you're on an All-American on all five of those, that's where you're a unanimous All-American, or you get on three of them, you're a consensus All-American. But the Sporting News is one of those five. AP is another one. You know, there are others, Football Writers Association. But Shanks, a first-team All-America punt returner by the Sporting News. He led the country this year with 329 punt return yards, led the country in punt return average, 20.6 yards, and was tied for the lead with two punt return touchdowns. He's a finalist for the Johnny Rogers Jet Award, which Joe Adams won in 2011. I think that was the inaugural year that they had the Jet Award. And so we talked about him yesterday. Is he an upgrade over Isaiah Satania? We'll see. I don't know that you get as many punt return opportunities in the SEC, but, yeah, I mean, this is – there aren't a whole lot of All-Americans, I would think, that are in the transfer portal, and Arkansas has just gotten one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked the other day about how the return game was not something Arkansas was really strong in. They didn't give themselves any advantages there. And, you know, there were several reasons for that. I think just kind of the punt return stuff on the whole was rough. We talked about – a lot of friendly fire, a lot of near misses with that, and that's not.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but I'm trying to be polite. You know what I'm saying? I wonder how much of that is on the returner.
I don't think that much of it is. That's the thing. So I'm also wondering.
So you don't
wondering...
think that the, you know because like, you know, I just wonder if there's a communication there from the returner that hey, you know. Peel off,
right,
go left,
right.
Whatever the
yeah, I don't,
whatever
I don't,
the word is,
right. I'm not sure, and so I think it's hard to, you know, that was why it was so baffling to see it continue to happen
because it wasn't the same player. It
no.
was like three different. They had that problem with three different players running into Isaiah this year,
right? And it was even guys. I think like Isaac Tislaw, there was like a near miss with him. You know, like guys that you would expect to know a little bit. You know, a lot of the other ones were like, okay, it's true freshmen. It's, you know, guys that are only seeing their action on special teams, you know, stuff like that. And but, you know, the Oklahoma State game when he ran into, was it Cross Johnson that he ran into? And he had almost run into him earlier in the game, or he had, but he'd hung on to the ball. Like, that was like an instance of the same guy. But, yeah, it was over the course of the season, it just kind of kept happening. And so, you know, that was a special teams mess up that just we kept seeing. It was really confusing why it kept happening. But I think, you know, I don't know how much of that is on the returner versus how much of that is special teams as a whole, how much of that is on the guys that are running down there. I don't know. And I think that's something that they're going to have to look at, especially when you're going to have a guy that could add this much value in the return game. You can't afford to, you can't cost yourself that advantage with that kind of mess up.
I just think about baseball, you know, like when you've got an infielder drifting back into the outfield trying to make a play and you've got an outfielder coming in, it's the outfielder's like that's his ball.
Right.
And he's the one who's got to make the call, you know, I got it. and get that out, that infielder out of there. A punt return, you know, a lot of times whenever they can't field it, it'll bound, and he's yelling, "Peter, everybody get away." I just wonder if there's some communication that was off.
There has to be something, but that's so
for
baffling.
It to happen that many times.
Right, but that even is more baffling if it's a communication issue, because that should be so coachable. Like, that should be easy to solve, right?
Yeah. Again, I don't know if it was a problem. Just, it's just a thought that I had earlier today. Shanks, by the way, he's not just a returner. He had a decent year from a receiving standpoint. 62 catches, 656 yards, 5 touchdowns. He scored a touchdown against Arkansas, so we've seen him do it against an SEC team. We'll see if he can. He's a small guy, 5'8", 180 pounds. So there were a couple of those. Isaiah was one. Jordan Anthony was one this year that, you know, you felt like Arkansas was going to be able to take advantage of their uniqueness, I guess you will. They both had track speed, and they weren't able to do that. We'll see, you know, if he fits any better into this offense.
Yeah, I'll be curious kind of what the use of him there is. And, you know, yeah, like you said, Satania was not a particularly big guy. It seems like this is kind of trying to be their replacement for Satania. And, you know, it's never going to be one-to-one. These are all different players with different skill sets. But as far as, you know, size-wise, it sounds like how they want to use him, it's going to be similar to Satania.
Noticed a couple of former Razorbacks have gotten All-America nods this week. Jackson Woodard out at UNLV. I've seen where he's made some All-American teams. I think I saw – did I see that Chris Paul had made an All-American? I think he did.
It wouldn't surprise me. He had a tremendous year.
That's one of those I've heard that he did. I haven't actually gone to verify that he did. But obviously he had a great year this year with Ole Miss. And then one of the interesting stories yesterday in Razorback football world is that Barry Odom, who's now at Purdue, he's actually hired away a couple of Arkansas's quality control coaches who have been here – for a few years. Kelvin Green had been here for 3, Jake Trump had been here for 5, and they are both going to Purdue. Kelvin to become the Boilermakers defensive line coach, and Jake Trump is going to Purdue to coach the Boilermakers defensive ends. And so, you know, you hear these names sometimes in recruiting. You know, they can't go on the road and recruit, but whenever the players come in here, you know, it seems like a ton of the defensive recruiting stories that I've read over the years, I've read Jake Trump's name, Jake Trump, and now he's gone. And so on the surface, it may not seem like these are big losses, but it seems like maybe within the building, it's something.
Yeah, definitely. Jake Trump was at he was a player at Missouri when I was a student so I covered him. So that was kind of that was always cool to like see him around. It was still like, you know, I would see him usually in the press box, you know, because he would be up there. And so coming up or down, I would usually see him up there. And it was always every time I was like, seeing him in Arkansas gear was always like, wait, what? Even though he's been here for several years, it just always kind of surprised me. But no, I think you're right as far as, you know, the impact that these guys have. You know, it goes underrated, I think. And, yeah, I think in recruiting especially, they have more of an impact than I think it might appear.
Here we go. Chris Paul was AP All-American. Yes. And Jalen Catalon was named an AP All-American
really?
At UNLV.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So three players who were here, mm-hmm. who went elsewhere. And I think that's probably the fear that a lot of people have about, you know, the Luke Cazes, mm-hmm. the Patrick Kudas, you know, whoever the top, Jalen Braxton. I think that's the fear, is that they're going to leave here and then they're going to go have success somewhere else.
Yeah, that's what we talked about yesterday with, like, why did some of these losses, you know, we talked about even DeBinion as an example. You look at his numbers, why do people feel those losses so strongly when it seems like those are production numbers you can replace? It's because of that fear of, you know, their potential being realized somewhere else when it could have been realized here.
Now, on the other hand, Arkansas has had some players who have transferred in, and they've had Drew Sanders.
It goes both ways.
I mean, he had an All-America season. It was the only Butkus Award finalist in the history of Razorback football. So, yeah, I don't know what the net – it's probably net negative on in terms of players who have left and had success elsewhere than the players who have come in. But you're right. It does cut both ways. So that's your Razorback football update, your latest transfer news. You go to RollHawkSports.com. Richard is all over this. Read something last night where – there's some more transfers that are expected in today, not necessarily to commit, but that are expected to come in and visit the program. And so he's churning out stories like you wouldn't believe on our website right now. Seems like there's about 10 a day from him. He's got you covered at WholeHogSports.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about Greg Byrne, the Alabama AD, and this plea that he put out to the Alabama fans yesterday for more NIL dollars. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Was that too loud for you? I saw you turning your audio down.
Oh, no, it's all
down.
Good. I'm always messing with it.
Okay. Let's hear. So I want to talk about this. Did you see the plea that Greg Byrne, the Alabama AD, put out yesterday for more NIL dollars?
Yes, it was very long. It was one of those where I like opened it and I kind of skimmed it and I kind of did the like, I ain't reading all that. Mm-hmm. Sorry that happened, or happy for you, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
And then so many people were talking about it that I was like, I got to go back and read this whole thing. It is like a full-on like letter, basically, that he put on Twitter. And yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I don't think, you know, Hunter Yurecek's not alone anymore. No. And not that he was before. I think they are not the first athletic directors to ever seek more donations to their NIL collective.
I was thinking about reading this. Cindy, could we get some sad music? Can we play some sad music, like some real somber, like as I read this letter to Alabama fans? Sydney's going to look for some sad music, I think. Basically, let me say this. If Alabama is out here saying that they don't have enough NIL dollars, then that totally, like, it resets your thinking on all this.
Something interesting that, and I don't know if they coined this term, but a podcast, I listen to this podcast, Split Zone Duo. That's my kind of national football podcast of choice. They, and I don't know if this is a term they originated, but they talk about the Saban discount, like guys being willing to take a little bit less money in order to go play for Nick Saban. That's gone now. And I don't know how significant that would have been, how much less money Alabama was having to spend because of that, but Kalen DeBoer does not have that advantage.
That's interesting, because you could probably turn that around and talk about Arkansas basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there a Calipari?
Yeah.
Because, you know, he said that we're not going to get into bidding wars with teams. And he says that he tells the players on the front end, he says, there are places you can go and get more NIL dollars than if you come here. He said, what I can guarantee you is, what I can offer you is an ability to get onto NBA scouts' radars. And, you know, then he goes into all the, you know, the players that have played for me have made over $5 billion in career earnings. And, you know, however many of them have gone on, I think all but two went on to get a second paycheck. And so, I wonder if there's something about that with Arkansas basketball, because I've always thought Calipari and Saban, it's my thinking on this has changed a little bit, because Saban won so many national championships at Alabama and Calipari won one at Kentucky. But when they came in, because they came in around the same time, I think Saban maybe about a year and a half before Calipari got to Kentucky, but it felt very much like their situations kind of dovetailed in that there was this, you know, blue blood program that was hiring its guy. They finally went out and they got the guy to lead their program after these years of struggling. And, you know, Kentucky basketball, they didn't win as many national championships as Alabama, but from a you know, national standpoint, they elevated their program, I think, to about an Alabama football level.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how a coach like that can kind of change a program and the impact it has. I think basketball, you know, Arkansas basketball, it doesn't seem like is strapped for cash at all. And, you know, I think the caliber of player that they're trying to get is probably going to be worth more than the average program. And I think Alabama was probably in the same boat. But, yeah, I'd be curious, you know, how much that is, if that's something that they sort of try to do, is basically be like, hey, you can either get more money somewhere, or you can still get a lot of money, maybe a little less, and you can play for John Calipari.
Did we ever find any sad music, Sydney? Maybe like some Sarah McLachlan or something. Sarah McLachlan. Yeah, we good? No? No? Okay, well, I'm just going to start reading this. So here's what Greg Byrne said to the fans in this letter that he gave them. He said, Alabama fans, over the past few years, there have been drastic changes in college athletics. We've been careful during this transitional period to protect our position at the top of college athletics while being mindful to listen, engage, and learn from our generous supporters, proud alumni, and unrivaled fans to make sure that we protect our great traditions here at Alabama. But there's a time for talk and a time for action, and now is a time for action. This really sounds like, you know, like this is like, oh, hope we don't get dinged for a
copyright. Oh, yeah, you're probably right. I should stop the Sarah McLachlan.
this really sounds a lot like one of those candidate mail-outs.
Yeah, it does.
Email blasts after something big happens.
Yeah.
Anyway, yada, yada, yada. Although we have been competitive from an NIL standpoint, our competition has us in their sights and are actively trying to surge ahead with NIL. You've heard examples of other teams using promises of multi-million-dollar paydays to lure away our players or convince them not to come to Alabama. It is time for the Bama Nation to fight back. imagining him having like a clenched fist up in the air as he was. He says, under the new model of athletics, college athletics, which is a result of an antitrust lawsuit against the NCAA, a university can succeed if their fans purchase authentic NIL from student athletes. The good news is when Yay Alabama, that's their collective, was created last year, the focus was on providing our fans with legitimate product rather than booster inducements. He goes on to hawk Yay Alabama a lot, subscription to it, blah, 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 blah. And then this is the most arrogant Alabama thing ever to say. At Alabama, we've not measured ourselves against our competition. We are the standard, and that measurement is against the mirror and against a rich and proud history. But it's impossible to ignore what is taking place in college athletics. Hungry fan bases are acting decisively to give their respective programs competitive advantages. We must respond. We are Alabama. Join Yay Alabama today. So, I mean, if Alabama's out here saying they don't have enough NIL dollars, yeah, that tells you that this train ain't slowing down anytime soon. It doesn't matter what happens from a revenue share standpoint. This was a real eye-opening plea from an AD, from a program that has a lot of resources at its disposal.
I mean, it's what we've talked about. There's never going to be enough money. There's never going to be enough. Because I imagine Alabama has a lot in NIL. I imagine they have significantly more than Arkansas does. I don't know that for sure because we never know the exact numbers on any of this stuff. But, you know, there's always going to be somebody who has more. There's always going to be somebody who offers your star player more. And there's just never going to be enough. They're never going to be satisfied. There's no end point. There's no benchmark. There's nothing. Yeah. And so that's why you're going to, you know, you see a program like Alabama, which, as we know, is not strapped for cash, but still feels like they are in the kind of position that they need to issue this kind of a public plea. Like, there's just, it's never going to end. There's never going to be enough money. That kind of thing, like, it makes me kind of sad. Like, it's just,
despicable.
Yeah, when I get sad about it. And that's when, like, because of all the, everything that's happened in the last few years, I feel like it's impossible to observe college football without, like, knowing too much about how the sausage gets made. And it's so disheartening.
And I was reading some of the replies to his tweet. And, you know, there was a lot of outrage on the part of fans. It's like, look, man, I buy tickets. I give to the athletic fund. Buy merchandise. Like, what else do you want from
it's the same
here?
Thing Arkansas fans have been
it's
saying.
It's the same thing everywhere.
Check. Yeah.
It's everywhere. I mean, like, is Ohio State going to come out and say, hey, you know, thanks for giving $22 million last year for our football team. Next year we need to jump up to 25 so we can beat Michigan.
Yeah. It's the same thing. Yeah, Arkansas fans have been living this ever since Hunter Yurecek kind of came out and said we need more from fans, and they feel really slighted by that. They feel like they're being just sort of robbed by, you know, just being begged for money left and right, and then being told they're not a good enough fan if they don't do enough, you know. And, you know, we talked about it in the context of Arkansas about, like, hey, this is not a state that has, you know, a particularly high household income. You know, like, these people in Arkansas are
49th
not,
in the country.
Yeah. And Alabama is probably pretty low as well, if I had to guess.
No, probably.
And so, you know, it's a similar situation. You know, we think of the Alabama football program as having a lot of money because they do, because they have a lot of large booster support. But the average fan is not like that. They're already getting priced out of even going to these games.
Yep. That's a good point.
I mean, I just saw a headline, I think today, about the Phoenix Suns. It's different. It's professional sports. But they're lowering a bunch of concession costs. And it's going to go from costing a family of four like $96 to get hot dogs and drinks at a game to like $24. And like, that's the kind of thing, you know, we're never going to see that in college because there's
Yeah. There's always a cliff that you can go over from a financial standpoint.
Yeah.
Always. And you're right. Like, colleges, I don't feel like it's anywhere – it's not within, you know, our sight line right now, but I hope so. People are getting turned off by what's going
people
on.
People don't
want
to go to games, you know, they don't want to go to games. They don't, you know, people are becoming less, they're becoming discouraged following the sport as a whole because, like I said, it's almost inescapable. Like, you almost can't be a dedicated fan and not hear about this. Like, you can't just, like, pretend it's not, you can't, like, not listen to it. You almost have to think about it and talk about it if you're going to be, you know, if you're going to follow it. If you're a very casual fan, which is totally fine, you might be able to avoid knowing what's happening with NIL, knowing what's happening with NCAA lawsuits. But if you, you know, are pretty dedicated, you know, if you listen to a daily college sports podcast, you are probably going to know about it, and it's really hard to avoid.
So this Greg Byrne, I'm sure he was thrilled to see this come out from CNBC this morning. What are the 75 top college sports programs worth? it's a valuation that CNBC's put together of, you know, so like you're hearing all this about, you know, private equity potentially trying to buy a stake in college programs. And so, you know, like, what would they cost? What's the valuation of programs? Well, this is the list, and I'll tell you a few, and we'll get down to Arkansas. Ohio State's number one at over $1.3 billion. University of Texas, number two at over $1.2 billion. Texas A&M. Just behind Texas, over $1.2 billion as well. University of Michigan, a little over $1 billion. Those are the billion-dollar athletic programs. You got several that are over $900 million, beginning with Alabama, then Notre Dame. Notre Dame, I feel like, probably is a little bit low because it's more of a global brand. Georgia, Nebraska, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Penn State, Southern Cal, LSU. Those are all over $900 million. You get down here to number 18, that's where you find Arkansas, with a valuation of $776 million, just behind Oregon, just ahead of Kentucky.
I'm surprised to see them there. I guess I would have thought they would be lower.
But it's one of those, and, you know, like Wisconsin's on here too, and Nebraska's on here. These are states where, well, I guess in Wisconsin you do have the Packers. But like Nebraska and Arkansas, you know, there's no other professional sports.
Right, that makes
sense,
yeah.
You know, so like they are the team. And so I think that that's one of the reasons why, you know, they've got such a high value to them. Kentucky, similar deal. I know that you got the Bengals and the Reds and, you know, Kentucky, they're big fans of those teams. But there's no other, you know, there's no pro sports team in Kentucky. And so, you know, the Wildcats, especially basketball, is such a big deal.
Yeah, they're probably the highest, like, you know, I would still consider Kentucky a basketball school. They're probably the highest basketball school on here. I don't think there's any other school on here where basketball is, you know, more dominant than football, in terms of popularity at least. But, yeah, I mean, I guess I'm surprised to see Arkansas that high because a lot of the teams above and around them are, I would consider, more national brands. And maybe it's maybe I'm biased because I grew up here, and so it's hard for me to think of Arkansas as a national brand, but I just have never thought of them that way. You know, I think they're recognizable to people, but I don't think, you know, you're not going to see somebody that doesn't watch Arkansas games in, like, a Razorback hat. You're going to see somebody that never watches Notre Dame in a Notre Dame hat. You know, like, so I just – and Oregon, you know, things like that, like – more recognizable, more popular brands that have more, I guess some people will call them, like, sidewalk fans, casual fans.
T-shirt fans.
Yes, exactly. I don't think of Arkansas as a t-shirt fan school. And this, it feels like a lot of the other schools on here are more t-shirt fan schools.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
No. I understand what you're saying. I just think the fact that Arkansas is a big deal in the
for
state.
For sure. I guess I'm surprised that and they are a big deal. And I guess I'm surprised that puts them as high as they are. But that's
it
a good thing.
It helps when you have the SEC checks coming
that's
in.
That's true. That makes true.
Makes a big deal.
Yeah.
Or a big difference. I want to talk to you real quick. Diego Pavia, the Vanderbilt quarterback, got a preliminary injunction yesterday from a federal court judge that, for the time being, allows him to continue to be part of the Vanderbilt football program, even though he's out of eligibility at the end of this year. You know, at the crux of his case, he said that, you know, he spent 2 years in junior college, and so he only got to spend 3 years at Division I, and he did not get the same earning opportunities that players who spend 4 years or sometimes 5 years in Division I that they were able to get. So this is really interesting. And it opens the door to other players who have got a junior college background potentially getting more eligibility. I mean, the times for a coach right now are just so chaotic because you got all this other stuff going on, and now you got, okay, now we got all these JUCO guys, and we got to figure out how much, you know, eligibility they have left.
Yeah. Yeah, I was on the radio this morning on 92 on the Ticket with Eric G, and he asked me about, you know, GM roles and what the use of a GM is and how much Arkansas could maybe benefit from having one. And, like, that's another thing that having a GM would be helpful because, like, it is so hard to keep all of this straight.
Yep.
Somebody whose job it is, like, you kind of need somebody whose
job it is.
You need
a GM, and you need more than just a GM.
You
need
GM
a GM's
staff.
Office.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need a whole scouting department. You need people who really are keeping up. And not that coaches don't know and can't know. They mm-hmm. should and they have to right now. But especially this time of year is so insane. I mean, like, coaches that are getting ready to play in the playoff are also having to manage this kind of stuff.
It's
These
crazy.
Staffs are stretched so thin. And, you know, it's hard to pity a team that made it to the playoff, you know, like when you're an Arkansas fan watching, you know. But at the same time, it's like this is something that affects everybody. It's going to get harder and harder for coaches to manage this.
Talking about local radio, Rhett Lashley was on Chuck Barrett and Bill Mattingly's show this morning. And, you know, they asked him, you know, what's this time of year like? And he said it is as chaotic as it looks like from the outside.
Yeah.
Like inside the building. I did look at this, though, for Arkansas. They've got two football players who've got a junior college background who are on the team right now. Tyrell Reed is listed as a sophomore, and Ashton Noe is listed as a redshirt junior. So I guess there's a potential that, you know, if they stay with the program long term, that maybe they could get an extra year of eligibility. And I also wonder how it might affect baseball because there are so many junior college baseball players who come into Arkansas's program. Not as many as there used to be, but. You know, like Brent Iredale. I think he's going to be one of the best players this year from Australia. He's been at a junior college in New Mexico. Justin Thomas is an outfielder who's very highly regarded. He has come in from a junior college, and there are some other players too. Like, does that potentially reset their clock as it relates to the Major League Baseball draft?
Yeah.
And does it help them with their leverage? You know, maybe Arkansas gets to keep a player for 2 years when they thought they may only have him for one. Just something worth looking at. We appreciate you being here with us today. Tomorrow we'll have another podcast. We're going to play our interview with Ken Hatfield at today's Hogs Illustrated Sports Club luncheon. We'll talk to Coach Hatfield about his time on the college football playoff, what he thinks about the chaos right now in college football, and a lot more. We'll also give you our college playoff predictions on tomorrow's podcast and much more. Hope you'll visit us at wholehogsports.com as the day goes, or as we go throughout today. I'm sure we'll have plenty of news as it relates to Razorback football. Just seems like something's happening about every hour right now. Until tomorrow, hope you have a great day, everyone.